toward a former Senate President, Mr. Fred Hurd, and former Representative Dr. Peter Tarzian from Fall City School District Number 57 in Polk County. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning. I am Superintendent of Schools of Fall City School District. My name is Peter Tarzian. I'm a resident of Albany, Oregon. And with me is Fred Hurd, our Vice Principal at Fall City. And I would like to begin our testimony by deferring to my colleague, Mr. Hurd. He has a few introductory remarks about this bill.
Mr. President, we're honored by your presence here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's good to be with you. My name is Fred Hurd. I'm a resident of Salem, and I'm in my second year as a member of the staff at Fall City High School. And I, you know, one of the things that I learned when I was first a member of the House of Representatives and a member of the Education Committee, the chair of that committee at that time was Representative Carol Howe from Klamath Falls, who had been a county school superintendent. And as it was explained to me, he was probably one of the two people in the state of Oregon that really understood school funding formulas. And as I got to know him and as he mentored me, I agreed. And I'm going to limit my comments today to my perspective as a vice principal. And also next year, I will assume a position as principal of a grade school at Fall City.
And President Hurd, it's a good thing to see that there's some promotion still available after the serving as a presidency in the presidency of the Senate.
Thank you. Thank you. Well,
definitely a step up, sir.
Thank you, sir.
That's why we came,
to offer hope to some of us that are...
We have that school administrator term limit bill out there.
Well, actually, yes, because next year will be my last year as an educator. When I first started my teaching career nearly 40 years ago, I was on the staff at Klamath Union High School in Klamath Falls, and there were 2,000 students in that school. We were at split schedule. I taught freshmen. It was the year John Kennedy was assassinated, and then I taught for about 8 years there, and then I was on the staff at Oregon Institute of Technology for about 14 years, and then I've done some private vocational schools since, and been in private business also. And last 2 years ago, I decided that I wanted to return to public education, and I got my teaching license renewed, and then I was out driving about, and I found this school district that was out in Fall City, and I don't think I'd ever been to Fall City before. Went home that night and told my wife that I had found this neat school that I wanted to be a part of it. It was just prior to Dr. Tarzian's arrival, and later when he did arrive, he asked me for an interview. We didn't know each other at that point, and so he hired me. And I was a full-time teacher last year, and this year he asked me to be vice principal, teach half-time, and next year he's asked me to be the principal at grade school. I was attracted to the school, because I think partly for the old romantic ideas of the little red schoolhouse, and my wife, who is also a teacher, and I used to talk about going to some far distant city or town in eastern Oregon, and the two of us teach in a 8-room school, and we thought that would be really, really interesting work. As I've been a part of the staff at Fall City, what I have learned about small sizes, and we have about 135 students in the grade school, is that when we talk about things like character education, and we talk about making a difference, it's in this small setting that I think we can do that. We have a high school of about 65 students, and this year we implemented a discipline policy that returns us to some of the character issues that I think many of us grew up with, and we've been successful. The numbers the numbers are looking good in terms of, you know, you shall not swear in the classroom. You shall be on time. You shall not be tardy. You shall not talk back to the teacher. Will do this, you will do that, and we feel that we have been very successful there. But as we have progressed this year, it's very, very clear to us that if we started at kindergarten and we moved all the way through, we would really have something to behold. And that's what we mean to do next year. For instance, right now, I'm planning the month of September. And each month we're going to be talking about a different character, beginning in September with respect for animals, respect for authority. I've got a lady coming out who's into reptiles, and she's going to be bringing her reptiles out. And this is going to overlay what I think is very good teaching that's going on right now. I think at the end of this year, which will be a first of a 2-year program, and there'll be something that will carry through from kindergarten all the way up. And in our school, in grade school, we have 1 through K through 7. And so, and then the seventh graders come down to the high school in the afternoon for some block classes. I think we'll be able to make a difference. As I look at the overall thrust of Senate Bill 509, I see this bill as an opportunity for us to solidify our foundation and to be able to get on with the idea of teaching and doing some good character building. And I want to assure Mr. Chair, you and the members of the committee, that we in smaller schools are doing a very, very good job. And I want you to know that, and as I compare it to my experience in the larger school districts and everything, I think it's something that we, you know, as I think back to my years in the legislature, I tended to, you know, overlook the small districts really because I didn't know that much about them, but I can tell you that good things are happening there, and they're going to continue to happen. So I ask that you favorably consider Senate Bill 509. I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Tarzino.
Thank you, Mr. Byrd. I really appreciate your testimony and your long service to the state of Oregon. Mr. Tarzino, do you have additional testimony to offer?
Yes, if I might, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I've provided you with the talking points. Probably the best way to conceptualize those talking points is the details for justifying support of this legislation. And so what I'd like to do instead is give you an example. And it will be our example so that you'll understand that this is not a necessarily issue of rural and remote schools on the other side of the mountains, but actually right in your backyard. As you know, Falls City School District is adjacent to the Dallas School District, and it is the proximity of a elementary school in the Dallas School District that prevents our particular elementary school from qualifying for the small elementary school correction under the current statute. And this is how it works. Bridgeport School, which is in the Dallas School District, is grades K through 3. It has currently 67 students. It serves the Bridgeport community, which is a rural community. There really is no town in Bridgeport. Bridgeport is 3.8 miles from Falls City, the actual city of Falls City, and 3.8 miles from Falls City Elementary School. Falls City Elementary School, as Mr. Hurd noted, has 135 students, grades K through 7. In speaking with the superintendent of schools of the Dallas School District yesterday, I asked him what would be the capacity, you know, of your school to take all of Falls City Elementary School students and move them to the Bridgeport School. Well, he has a capacity for 100 students. He does not have the capability currently for educating grades 4 through 7. And so grades 4 through 7 potentially would be transferred to Oak Elementary. And so there would be some bus riders that would go to Bridgeport School, other bus riders that would go to Oak Elementary. The problem with Oak Elementary is that they're pretty much at capacity. They are not accepting more than just a few transfer-ins from other school districts. So we've continued to remain ineligible for the small school correction that other school districts are, other small elementary schools are eligible for, in a situation where even if we were to somehow consolidate our students, the receiving district really wouldn't be able to receive the students without busing them much further than 8 miles. That's a real life example of the dilemma.
Mr. Tarzian, I think the 8 mile limitation is a remnant of a period in time when we were trying to do everything that we could do to encourage consolidations.
I know that.
And for the record, I think that most of us are very happy that we seem to have emerged from that period.
Mm-hmm.
It's time possibly to revisit some of the remnants that we have left in our system. And in point of fact, if the school that you mentioned only had 10 students, it would still effectively prevent the school that you described from receiving any equalization dollars for the small school adjustment.
Correct.
Questions for the committee? Mr. Tarzian, thank you for your attendance. President Hurd, we really, again, appreciate your service to Oregonians and your testimony on this bill.
Thank you.
If we could have forward Senator Beyer, has graciously excused himself from his other duties in the building, and I believe he would like to introduce some witnesses that would offer testimony. So through his good offices, we'll call forward his witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Roger Beyer, State Senator, District 15. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 509 and for moving me to the front of the line as I'm skipping the committee next door that I'm supposed to be in.
Senator, what is that committee?
That's Ag.
We need to get you back to agriculture.
Yes, I was just hoping, Mr. Chair, that he wasn't bringing any PERS bills or workers' comp bills into this committee.
Senator Cork, you know I can put those just about anywhere.
Yeah. I can tell you where to put them, Mr. Senator.
With me today is Mr. Ray Halter. He is the principal at Maple Grove Elementary School, which is in the Mobile River School District. And Mr. Gregg, and I'm going to put your last name, Kriplein. He is a parent of students there, and they want to talk to you about the situation in Maple Grove. I would like to just point out that this bill also affects another school in my Senate district, which is St. Paul School District in Marion County. It's a small rural area just north of Salem here, not very far, much like Fall City you just heard about. It is surrounded by other larger school districts that it is prevented from receiving these monies because it is too close to Newburgh and to North Marion area. So, as I think everyone will tell you, the distance from the schools really probably shouldn't be a limitation, especially when that school is in a different district and those students have no opportunity to go there anywhere, because many schools today in my area are, in fact, closed boundaries. Their schools are too full and they're not allowing students to transfer back and forth. So that's not really even an option for many of these people to send their students to a different school, larger school, even though it may only be a couple miles away. If it's in a different district, these districts, both school boards have to agree to a transfer. And we've got a bill to work on that too, by the way. Different subject, different day. But I just like to point out that I have a lot of history with this issue. I think I've been working on this since the 93 session as a school board member at Maple Grove at that time when it was an independent school, and at that time it was a 10-mile limitation factor, and we did get it moved to an 8-mile distance, and we have been trying to get this within the same district language for quite some time also, and I think it's time, Mr. Chair. With that, I won't take any more time. I'll go back to my committee and let the people who know more about the school tell their story. Thank you.
Senator Beyer, did you wish to introduce Ms. Thomas, also from Maple Grove?
Yes, I do. Would you have
forward
to my seat?
Who would like to lead off? Yes, sir.
Good morning. I'm Ray Halter, the principal of Maple Grove, and I also share another school. I'm principal of Roldale School in Walla River School District. And this is Pam, one of our teachers at Maple Grove, and this is Greg. And we just felt that maybe hearing from Greg, who is a parent up there, and I'll tell you a little bit about him, was better than coming from me as a principal up there. He can tell you the benefits of a small school, and we are always in need of more funding. So Greg, first off, Greg is a strong supporter up at our school. In the past 3 years, he has volunteered one day a week helping in his child's classroom, which is really unusual, and we really appreciate that. He's also president of our parents' club, and he's presently running for a seat on the Molalla School board this coming March. In March, for one of the seats on that. We have 5 open seats on our school board. So, Greg, I'll let you tell our story a little bit.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. First off, I...
Could you, for the records, just pronounce your name for me?
Sure will.
Thank you.
It's Greg Crippoline.
Thank you.
I'm going to just give a brief introduction about Maple Grove School. Maple Grove Elementary School is a small rural school that is approximately 10 miles south of Molalla, Oregon. It first opened its doors to students in 1888. Maple Grove has had many changes since consolidation with 6 other elementary districts and Molalla Union High School in 1993, but it still continues to be the community focal point. Maple Grove Elementary School currently operates as a K-5 building with a student enrollment currently at 64 students. I believe our school is unique. I'm going to just give a brief explanation here. Because of our small size, we face serious issues regarding school closure every year and unstable staffing. For the past 4 years, we have been allotted only 2.5 teachers and have had to shuffle first, second, third graders between different classrooms in the afternoon. Every year we have kindergarten and first grade in the morning, and after the kindergartners leave, a blended class of first, second, and third graders in a classroom in the afternoon with 35 students. Second and third graders are placed in a classroom set up for kindergartners with the remaining first grade students. There's not enough space for them, and they lose out on the community feeling of a self-contained classroom. This year we lost our special education assistant because our 5 special ed students moved on to the middle school. This assistant was also used for recess duties, classroom assistance, etc. We have since identified several special ed students with no assistant or regular special ed teacher to help them. Not only do we have difficulty serving our students, we have to double up on duties between our Title I and library assistants. It has been an ongoing fight to keep our doors open for the past 6 years. Without Maple Grove Elementary, our youngest students will have to be bused more than 2 hours a day for about a 3.5-hour school day. We hope that with additional funding, our doors will remain open and we will be guaranteed 3 full-time teachers and the necessary assistance to meet our children's needs. Presently, 50% of our students are on a free or reduced lunch. Many of our students come to school ill-prepared. Despite the difficulties we face, our test scores prevail, and we score very well on the state report card. Last year, we had a high rating of strong, only missing exceptional by 10 points. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Thank you. I can see why you'd be anxious to volunteer in such a school.
Thank you.
Yeah?
I'm just here to...
Moral support.
Yes.
Mr. Chair. Question?
I guess I would ask a question, and I think I'm going to ask this question of other folks that come up as we have these discussions about school funding formula, because I'm in the middle of it on the force receipts side of it. And so I have 2 school districts that would be impacted by the changes anticipated in this bill, but the question I have to ask is the question that we're being asked as a committee, and that is, what's your response to this notion that in a zero-sum game,
what we give to small school districts we take away from other school districts, or we don't acknowledge the needs of other school districts that are losing enrollment. 13 of 14 of my school districts are losing enrollment, and the opposite problem, which is the rapidly growing school districts. Can you guys comment on that?
No. I still think our school's really unique, and I'm sure those are frustrating decisions. But I guess we look at it from our perspective and our school and the setting we have and how much that school is our community. And I know those are tough decisions, but I still believe we have to represent what we see and know.
Mr. Chair, I was hoping the answer was going to be we shouldn't do it at the expense of any other schools, that we should do it because we need to do it.
It should be instructive for all the other witnesses.
That's right. That's how you create a record in this building.
Can I say that now?
Yeah.
Under the rules of evidence, we'd say that you were leading the witness, Senator Parkman.
Right. I'm going to lead him right to the Senate President.
But we're not under the rules of evidence, Senator Parkman, so lead on. Any other questions for the committee or for the panel? Ma'am?
I don't know that I have a question as much as a comment. I just think it's terrific that you're here fighting for your school and telling your story. And, you know, so many districts all over the state have a story to tell about what is happening in their district and the struggle to meet the needs of all students in our state. And I appreciate hearing yours. I had never heard the story about your particular school or school district, and it's always good for us to learn about, you know, other districts than what we experience in our own parts of the state. So, and commend you as a parent for being so involved in the school. It's fabulous when parents are able to do that, and I know the schools love it. And I'm sure your children are very, very happy that you're able to be there and be involved. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Also, we appreciate Senator Byers' input. I'll thank him later on the Senate floor, but Maple Grove, 1888.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
These are irreplaceable living cultural artifacts in Oregon's history and heritage, and we simply cannot afford to let them pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have some folks who have traveled quite a distance to be here today, but and others who have testified before, but I'm going to go ahead and ask the folks from Days Creek, Oregon, if they are available now, to come forward and offer some testimony. And then we're going to go to the folks from Multnomah County who come to offer testimony as well. So, Mr. Ramos?
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I wasn't ready for this. I put myself towards the end of the list, so I was going to listen to what a lot of other people had to say. At Days Creek, we are located south of Myrtle Creek and east of Canyonville. It's a very large district geographically, but with numbers, we are a fairly small school, ranging about 212, 220 kids throughout the district. Last year, we our two campuses, one is in Days Creek itself, and then we have another campus that's 15 miles further up in the mountains. That leads to its own set of problems trying to provide special ed services, because with our current budget, we can't afford two special ed teachers and so forth. Things we've lost in lately, our music program, we have no music program for our students. Guidance is trying to be done by advisors that are not trained in counseling and so forth. We've lost our librarian, a full-time librarian. We have no elementary specialists of any kind to give teachers prep time within those days. If our high school had originally been built, or if South Umpqua's high school had been built 200 yards further away, that would have qualified for the small schools, because it's about 200 yards shy of the 15-mile limit. When Mr. Henderson called me about this bill, I started looking at some things, and, you know, our Tiller community and our whole Days Creek community is at poverty level about 73%, and we really need to be able to emphasize on a lot of those students that are not coming to our school, prepared to learn. We need to be able to emphasize more at our elementary schools. The additional funding for our school, as well as all the others that we'll speak to today, we're not trying to take anything away from anybody else. We just want to provide an adequate, comparable education for our students as any other district in the state of Oregon. That's pretty much all I have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Amos, any questions? Mr. Amos? Hearing none, thank you
thank
for
you.
Your effort today.
You.
We do have a question from Senator Pryor.
Yes, Senator, over here.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, do you believe, we're talking about small schools, and I've become more aware of the problems. It's not just a remote rural issue. In the school districts that I represent, one of them is looking at closing 5 schools this year and 4 schools next year, one of which it's in the same school district, but it's in a different town. And I guess my question is, do you think we ought to apply this to all small schools rather than being unique to schools that are 8 miles from another one?
I think the distance factor is huge, especially at Tiller for us. So I'd say that you have to look at each individual district. If you have 2 schools that were built 3 miles apart, 4 miles apart within a community, and then they had to combine, that's more realistic to do something that way, to be able to have classes instead of 10 or 11, maybe 22 or 23, and that's a money savings. And those present their own set of problems. We don't have that option, having campuses 15 miles apart. We do try to bus our younger kids up and created a K-5 building at Tiller. It used to be a K-6 at Tiller and a 1 through 12 down at Days Creek. We've taken all of our, because we had like 5 kids at Days Creek in first grade and 5 kids at Tiller in first grade. So instead of having all first graders getting 2 different types of education, because 2 different teachers, 2 different curriculums in a lot of respects, we put them, at least we got all of our first graders, second graders, third graders together, but they're being bused an hour a day to do that. So we had to make those choices for the education of our children. And, that's because it's unique for us, having the 2 campuses and a high percentage of our younger students live up in the Tiller area, which is, another 15 miles further up the road from Canyonville, and Days Creek is approximately 8 miles from Canyonville at this time. So it's different and unique.
I understand unique. Right. I'm trying to put in my mind an area, the one that I'm thinking of, it's in the Eugene School District, but they have an elementary school that's in Coburg, which is probably about 7 miles from the nearest school district in that district. But some of those kids who go to that school live farther north at the county line and actually might be on a bus for an hour a day to get into Eugene to go to school. So it's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, I'm not trying to downplay the importance of what you're laying out. I'm just trying to rationalize in my own mind and use others as a sort of a wall to bounce the ball against to get some perceptions. So thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Ryan.
Thank you.
The individual from Multnomah County, Saudi Island School District and Scappoose School did not leave their name, but if they could come forward. Come on down. Just drag an extra chair up to the podium. Nobody's getting out of this. You better come.
This is not like Wobegon. There's no shy people here.
Must have a designated driver with the group. That would be good.
Yes. All the children are about
for the record, to answer your name and please offer your testimony for the record.
My name is Julie Cleveland. I'm a parent volunteer at Sophie's Island School. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about Sophie's Island School. Sophie's Island is the largest inland island west of the Mississippi. We have 1,300 residents, 80 students at our school. And way back when the county was first founded, we actually had 5 schools on the island. And back in the 30s, it consolidated into 1 school when our road systems and transportation systems improved. We've had some changes in our school over the past 3 years. We used to be our own district. But because we didn't have a high school and we didn't have the funding to build a high school, we were asked to merge with another district, and we consolidated with the Scappoose School District 3 years ago. We are in an anomaly in Scappoose School District. We are 12 miles away from the nearest school. And I think because of our remoteness, we are not given some of the opportunities and achievements that our kids could get at other schools because of our remoteness. And I would like to address Senator Cochran and his comment he made about fairness and about taking away from others. And what I see happening with this bill is not taking away from others, but giving others, us, the remote schools, the opportunity to be equal with the others in our district. And that's how I see it. And I turn it over to Mary Ann Hansen, our fifth and sixth grade teacher.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Corcoran,
just before we get there, I mean, I understand exactly the spirit of your comment, but if we're playing, I'm telling people that we're playing the zero-sum game. So I understand about the equity, and I certainly support what you're saying, but that, you know, I'd like to see a price tag attached to each one of these proposals, including my own, and then see how much additional revenue would be needed so that other schools were held harmless, and we did take care of small schools. So that's the difficulty with it.
My name's Mary Ann Hansen. I teach fifth and sixth grade at Savvy Island. And we have three full-time classroom teachers. We have a half-time kindergarten teacher. So we've combined first and second, third and fourth, and fifth and sixth. We have a principal who's with us 2 days a week. We have a music teacher who comes 1 day a week. So we've got real minimal staffing. We have one classroom assistant. We've been given a special ed classroom this year with a special ed teacher and two assistants of her own. They are very specific to her, and their help in other classrooms is minimal. So we have 80 students that we deal with, and I would speak to simply the value of a small school, pure and simply the value of a small school. Small schools relate to small staff, and with a small staff, the numbers are just so easy to work with. You have a sense of collegiality there that I think is missing in some of the larger staff. It's easy for us to work together. The planning is a little easier, collaboration. Fifth and sixth knows what first and second is doing. I can send some of my kids down to work with first and second graders, which often is appreciated. We're flexible. If we need to make changes within a school day or within a week to accommodate what other things that are happening, that's easy for us to do. We have really terrific contact with our parents. I know them all on a first-name basis. They all know me. I know all my students. None of them are in trouble to the point where we can't deal with it. Very few of them are slipping through the cracks. Our school report card was excellent this year. Our scores were fairly high. And I don't know that my kids would get this kind of attention and this kind of detail in a school where they were one of larger numbers. So speaking for small classrooms, small school, that would be what I believe to be wonderful about them. Students coming to my class shouldn't be afraid of me because they already know who I am from the younger grades. I know who's coming to me. Parents appreciate the safety that we have because we know all of the students. We know who's in our building. We know who should and who should not be there. We have parents actually coming to Savvy Island School from other schools in the district, actually bringing their kids to us in search of small school. More than half my class comes from off the island, out of the Skaplus district. So it speaks to the desire for small schools and to the benefits that they see coming from small schools. Perfect place to work.
Other testimony?
My name is Sherry Olson. I'm a parent. I am current Parent Teacher Club president. I've been president for 3 years, and prior to that I was treasurer, and I was secretary, and I was vice president, so I've done a lot of different things. I look at Sovies Island School, and I see a wonderful, wonderful thing. I've seen it threatened in the past when we were forced to merge. As a parent, the fear of seeing your local community grade school close is terrible. The fear of not seeing a kindergarten child a long distance is scary. So whereas Mrs. Hansen has said all the benefits of a small school, I would say as a parent, not only do I see the benefits, but I'm afraid of the opposite side of the coin, which is scary. And funding is always such an important issue, and it's since we are no longer Sovie Island School District, we don't have the staff that we used to have. And as a parent, I I guess I see it as part of my role is to step up and to volunteer. I currently go in on Mondays and I give spelling tests to first and second graders, and I do a lot of other things, plus I spend time fundraising. So, yes, there's so many benefits, and I guess I'd wrap up just by saying I'm so proud to be able to live in a school district where we have a good school, and I'm terrified of not having that school.
Questions for the panel? Hearing and seeing none. Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For making the trip here to Salem and offer your testimony today. We appreciate it. Mr. McManus is here from Josephine County. He's traveled from the Wolf Creek School District. So if I could have Mr. McManus forward. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mike McManus. I'm the principal of the Wolf Creek Elementary School, which is part of the Three River School District in northern Josephine County. We're an extremely poor school. We are designated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture as the Enterprise Community for the state of Oregon. Our current free and reduced lunch program is basically will run monthly between 85% and 98% of all of the children in our school. We really pride ourselves on the academic program that we are providing. We currently and have over the last 3 years, as far as the statewide assessment is concerned, in both grades 3 and grade 5, been at between 85% to 90% in the areas of reading, writing, and mathematics on the statewide standards, even though our socioeconomic status control group would indicate that we should be about 30 percentage points below that level. We have I'm emotional about my school because it is truly the center of our community, and I think that speaks to all of the rural schools that are represented here today. It truly is the hub of activities that are going on in our community. I am basically a 60% principal, and I serve the other 40% of my time for the Department of Human Services as a social service integration site for the state of Oregon. And so we are very concerned, of course, about our school remaining open. The Three River School District has, again, whenever the economic crunch comes, considered closure of schools. We last year closed two elementary schools, and so now we have kind of what we consider mega centers in relation to our student population, which is about 120 children, to a centralized elementary school of about 700, which is the next school closest to us over two mountain passes. And it is now full to capacity because of the closure of the Merlin Elementary School, so that we would have to even travel further to a school, none of which have really any vacancy capacity to handle our children. The thing that concerns us so greatly is the idea of being out on a county country road before daylight and a five-year-old child waiting for a bus. The hours that it takes for the child to get to school and then to receive his education places them in a situation where they do not have the same education or learning environment that other children do if they have to travel that far. They have to be up earlier. They have to be in school. They basically will return home then later in the school day as well. With that, I guess I'm done.
Geography certainly seems against you.
Yes, it is. And certainly this bill would really assist us in that we are only a few miles away from the Glendale School, which is over the next hill from us, another mountain pass, but is in a different school district and faces the same issue as has been testified to as well. They do not have the capacity to accept our students anyway.
Questions? Senator Mills.
Chairman, this is maybe off the mark a little bit, but sir, you mentioned the term socioeconomic status control group. What is that?
Basically, the statewide assessment shows that control, or that group that you should, that comparison group, I'm sorry, really what should have been the term. School districts of like poverty with our own are the schools that you typically are compared with. And although there aren't too many of them that are at our level of economic distress, which is 85% to 98% of all of the children, but that band would indicate, and the expectation is that we should be achieving more at that level than at our than at the level that we actually are achieving.
Okay, this is Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
That's a theoretical computation of some sort, I assume. You don't have an actual group of children.
Yes, the state does.
Things.
It is a statistical process.
We actually have a group of students who are being taught differently in different socioeconomic.
Not that they're being taught differently, sir, but rather that their academic achievement is related to the socioeconomics, and that typically the expectation would be for that group of children that they would not score, they would score at a different level. And so there is a group of children throughout the state that have high-level poverty, and there's typically a direct relationship between poverty level and academic achievement.
Okay, but this isn't like a medical experiment where we have a placebo group and somebody receiving actual medication.
No.
We're not doing some social engineering from
here. Not at all. Basically, there would be other schools within the state of Oregon that have a similar socioeconomic status profile as do ourselves. Typically, they score lower than our students have been scoring.
All right. So it's a set of assumptions that are made about certain groups and certain socioeconomic.
Not just assumptions, or actual test scores are at that level.
I think I understand. Anyway, we're kind of off the mark.
Well, I don't think so, Senator Vance. I think you're on the mark. The fact is that our witness is multitasking in his community, providing social services 40% of the time in school administration. 60, so I think he may have a little different picture of what we'd see in his community, and so maybe a unique perspective.
And again, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure exactly what we're seeing, whether you have exceptional teaching capacity and capabilities and students are exceptionally receptive in your community as opposed to others, or some children are just not as bright as others, or what we can draw from that.
My own sense is that wearing both hats, that social services hat as well as the principalship, allows us to have a much closer working relationship with the families than is typically the case. Because we do provide integrated social services, and we provide everything from dog licenses to immunizations right on campus. The families have a sense that they own that school, and there is a higher level of participation because of that.
Okay.
And that's the magic, if you will, more parental participation.
Okay, good. Thank you.
But there is a drawback, and that is because of confidentiality issues. He can't talk to himself.
You do a plenty good job of that.
Half
of the unpopulated part of the state.
Perhaps you can be tutoring. You're such good.
Yeah. You get answers too, Mr. Chair, when you talk to yourself.
Yeah, I do. An argument sometimes that I lose. Senator Beyer has a real question.
I'm struck. Well, I asked more of a comment. I'm struck by the comment from each of the individuals who spoke about the small schools. And remember, my colleague and neighboring office participant, Senator Courtney, is adamant that we should be, the virtues of small schools are so great that we should be recreating them in every community in Oregon, and we're going the wrong way to that day. I was shocked by your comment about the elementary school with 700 kids in it. That's outrageous. Mm-hmm. Outrageous size. My children went through schools that got as high as 500, and I know what that was like. I know what it was like in a middle school when it got up to almost 900 students, and my community changed that. It's a great cost to the community.
Well, I think there's been a very interesting record being created here. Schools that don't get help because they're within 600 feet of another school, I mean, you know, and it's not as the crow flies, I would find some way at the school district level to get a road closed so you'd have to 600 feet. But, and then adjacent to schools without the capacity to take the new students if there was a forced consolidation.
The other thing that's very unique is the fact that we've had repeatedly people talking about being part-time principals and part-time teachers, which I think is interesting.
Senator Castillo, did you have a question? Okay, she'll hold the question for another opportunity. I'd like to call forward a person who can give a different perspective, Mr. Rose, please. Fairness to the issue, we need to hear all sides.
Just the Grinch?
Mr. By any other name. This is Mr. By any other name. Mr. School Formula.
Welcome, Mr. Rose.
Mr. Happy.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And I want the rest of the committee to know that the chairman had been yesterday and cautioned me that if I didn't start coming with answers, I wasn't going to be welcome. But just continually saying negative things would be helpful or something to that effect. But I must share with you a couple, three thoughts. This is one of about 15 bills that help some schools at the expense of others, Senator Corcoran's point. The small and remote issue, originally it was the remote school issue that built this. I mean, we had it a long time before we had the equity formula. And the idea was that remote schools need to be supported because they are remote and need to exist. And prior to the middle 1990s, there was a flat cutoff of, I think, 10 miles for elementary and 15 for high schools. And nobody liked the cliff. You either at 14.9, you made it, and at 15, you didn't, or 15.1. So they created the phase-in. At that same time, we got into discussions like the one that the senator just referred to about changing where the roads go, and discussions whether you measured the mileage from door to door or edge of parking lot to edge of parking lot. Some schools who had been collecting the small and remote school addition were found to be closer than they had alleged they to be, and their explanation, they have straightened the roads and we didn't know that. But again, the issue was this is a way to get money, so we hang to that. And unfortunately, the voters decided that we weren't going to fund schools primarily with property taxes, and we're funding them a different way now. And this creates a very difficult problem for you. You must balance the funding needs and problems of all schools. Each school, every school, I think, in our state has a compelling story about their situation that should be listened to. But as you try to make a policy decision for all schools, you have some difficulties before you. And the particular, by the way, if we are successful in developing a better rationale or a better policy about how we fund all small schools, some of the small schools in this bill would be partially or fully addressed. But to address just this issue in isolation from other issues, you move, I think it's around, I looked, it's about $2.6 million to these 22 schools or school districts. It doesn't necessarily go to these schools. That's at a cost of $4 to $5 for all other school districts on a per student basis. Eugene is talking about closing five schools. One of them's in a small community outside of Eugene's city limits. A $4 to $5 hit for Eugene's about $100,000. That may keep that school open. And all I want to get on the table, again, of what I shared with you the other day, is that this is one of the issues. Another issue on the growth side, which hasn't come to you quite yet, but you know that in the distribution process, allege to or say we will pay 8% of the cost of opening a new school in the year that it comes on or a new portable, and that cost is defined as the cost of construction less the not including land acquisition, et cetera. And we're supposed to give 8% of that cost. This year, the amount of money you have left in that fund from the last biennium, those school districts are going to get somewhere between 5 and 5.5%, not 8%. You have in the appropriation of the governor's budget at the present time for the next biennium $17.5 million to do that. We were interested in not getting a position where there wasn't enough to do that like we did last time. So we just put a survey out last week. We have responses from 57 school districts of 198. We do not have yet a response from Salem, which is going to bring on a big high school in this biennium, plus some other schools, Beaverton, Hillsboro, North Clackamas, and a number of others, of big schools. We don't yet have their data. The data we have to date, it will cost $24.5 million, not $17.5 million. So those folks are going to come to you with this saying, this is only $2.6 million for these small schools. The growth side is going to show you that you're short $5, $10 million for that particular thing. And I'm here to ask you again, as I did last week, let's get them all in one place and try to make a policy decision that's best for all schools, given the zero-sum problem. Excuse me, I'll be quiet.
Mr. Rose, you need no excuses in this committee.
Okay.
Senator Bryant.
Honestly, I don't think we're asking you to be quiet. We're looking for help. My question would be is, the more I've thought about this over the years, and I think this is my fifth session dealing with this formula, I'm wondering if the remote is really misplaced, and what we're really talking about is small schools, and recognizing that, you know, Portland, just like some of the smaller communities we talked about here, Savi Island, has the same issue. Maybe we should be incenting districts, particularly at the elementary level, and I frankly have less concern about the high school level, to, you know, indeed go to small schools because obvious benefit from it and recognize that there is a cost.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, I don't think there's any argument about small being a good idea, although I differ with you on the high school. My kid's in a high school over 2,000 kids, and if he didn't have a lot of support from outside the school, I mean, it's very difficult, I think, for adolescents of that age to function in those size schools. Beaverton's now building high schools for 25 to 28 or 2,900 kids because the land use, they got to build them up. I don't think that's, and Senator Courtney's right, we just can't afford to do that. I am an advocate of remoteness isn't the issue. It's small school districts. We ought to try to focus on every school district having enough money to run what it needs to run. But you're still going to have, I think, some issue. The local boards are going to have to decide whether they want to take, when you, in the limited resource area, and I think you're going to be limited resources for entire your term limit situation, even Senator Menace's. The decision about whether we keep all these schools open and reduce programs to do that, or that's going to be a local decision to some extent. But I do think that the small school issue, small school district issue, is one that needs closer looking at, and that's one of the things we're working on. But you cannot just argue small is good and watch our large districts have to pile up large, large schools just because the people are pouring in there.
Senator Castillo.
Okay, I'd like your comments about how we get to the issue of poverty. When we heard from the gentleman representing Wolf Creek, I think he said it was, 85-90% of the kids qualified for the free lunch program. You know, and yet we know, and that's a very remote school district, but then we also know in the inner city we have a lot of poverty, low-income kids as well. How do we get to those issues? Because, you know, that brings on a lot of challenges and needs in those schools, and the need for additional resources to deal with the issues associated with that. And how do you see us addressing that in the formula?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, the formula has a poverty and a neglected student component, and it does distribute money to rural areas with poverty, and Portland, they have, and Josephine County, which that building was part of. Josephine gets some recognition in the formula for that. Is it enough? Probably not. But there isn't enough, in my view, although we're not crying about the 5-2 as not being enough, okay? But there isn't enough to do everything that most people think ought to be done. I don't know how to solve that problem.
So you're not suggesting that we take it seems like we should be taking another look at that, though. What, you know, how are we? How is the formula addressing it? Is it adequately addressing that issue or not?
Ms. Chair, Senator Castillo, if you didn't have a zero-sum game, that's one issue. But if you, our folks have taken the formula apart, done it with all the factors, use only one, use only two, and the end result of all that effort is you just shift the burdens one place to another. To say that the component is adequate for that issue, can't say that. If you increase that component, and you'll have to decrease some other one, probably that one isn't adequate either. And it's the formula attempts to be an approximation of sharing the where the burdens are. Is it precise? No. The only way you can make it precise, I think, is for you folks to decide to set budgets in every school district and decide we're going to spend this much in this area, and I don't think you want to go down that road. The formula just divides up a huge pot in a relatively fair way.
The chair has some observations, and I'll share these for the record. First of all, Mr. Rose, this is not a zero-sum game. We have not established what the funding total will be for schools in this legislative session. There's been some propaganda. There's been some hopefulness. There's been some numbers that people have voiced. There will be some revenue projections that are not what we would hope for. Not only, I think, here in March as we came into the revenue projection, but in the May revenue projection, we are not expecting to see new resources available. So to suggest this is a zero-sum game, that someone is always going to lose because we make some adjustments to the formula, is not necessarily an argument that I find very credible. Let me suggest that your commentary, in fact, is well made. We do need to look at the big picture. Small schools, growing schools, declining schools also need help. And there are lists of what we've heard characterized as winners and losers. But the fact is, this is a limitation that may have made sense when our objective was to collapse schools into each other with a program of forced consolidations. But we've turned away from that course. And now the issue is, do we perpetuate bad effects in local schools because of geographic factors? 600 feet. I don't think that makes sense. But I believe we will look at the big picture. We have a slew of bills. Senate Bill 61, 196, 200, 252, 260, 486, 509, 519, and 573 will be arrayed side by side. We'll follow the course that you suggest and look at all of the pictures. But in fact, even looking at the big picture and keeping that into perspective, we do, whether you see us helping the few at the expense of the many or helping the many at the expense of the few, our job as legislators is always to help some at the expense of some others. If you doubt that, then you're not paying attention to the tax structure or any of the other things that we do in this building. I think the question before us is whether we carry an anachronistic formula forward and make that an absolute zero-sum game for those small schools, and that's the issue. Senator Corcoran, you have a question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess, I tend to disagree with you. I think that there is a, 5.2 has been bandied about, and they've replaced money in the 5.2, but that's been the figure that everybody's kind of aiming at, and we've been told zero sum the last four sessions I've been here, so maybe it's not true in your mind, but certainly Democrats have heard it. And the concern I have, and maybe Ozzy can help us with this, I would heard Steve has definitely done this. When you look at this small school correction, you can look at it in one of two ways. In the zero sum, it's $4 a kid. At the expense of the other schools. The other way to look at it is that it has an absolute value of $2.6 million. And one of the things that might be helpful as we examine this so we can explain, even if we get rid of the anachronisms, as they're called, of the current budget or formula, at least we can explain to people what need has been expressed out there. So as we array these things side by side, it might be helpful instead of saying this will cost, $4 a student or taking the federal funding out is $24 a student, that we actually put a price tag on these additions and treat them as additions to the formula to see what the real need is. So that would be helpful as we develop these side-by-sides, if you can assist us and give us your best shot at what those numbers would look like as well.
Actually, I think that would be most helpful, and I think that's an excellent suggestion, Senator Corcoran. One clarification. A zero-sum game sets an upper limit as well as a lower limit, and what I'm suggesting is with flattening revenue, we may not have the resources that we hope to have. So the idea being that we talk about a zero-sum game as if there's a magical number. The numbers will be dictated to us largely by circumstances.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wish you hadn't explained that to me. I liked it the way I interpreted it the first time better.
I'm sure you did, but believe me, I'm not. I don't want to be the Grinch. I think you fill that role perfect.
All right, I assume you're done with me, but I got to inform you I received my first Social Security check this weekend, so you can fire me at any moment.
Mr. Rose, I think you're proof that people do get better as they get older. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank our good Representative Smith, who has been very patient. I'd like to bring him forward. It's my honor to have him as a counterpart in the House district that we share. Mr. Smith, would you like to offer your testimony?
Thank you, Chairman Farioli, members of the committee. It's truly an honor to be on this side of the building. I very rarely get over here.
Oh, don't start with that, Representative.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I did.
Learned
you know
from
that
the best.
Is there a hall pass selected?
I got to go get my boots, Mr. Chair.
It's going to get worse. Members, I'm here today because we need your help. We've got an issue before us that sometimes could be characterized as a rural versus urban issue. But I'm going to ask you today to set that aside and ask you to look at an issue that is not a political issue. It's not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's not a rural versus urban Oregon issue. We've got a social issue. We've got a community issue. We've got an issue of how do we provide equal opportunity for every child in the state of Oregon, whether they're coming from the inner city or whether they're in the most remote parts of the state of Oregon. You folks have a bill before you today, Senate Bill 509. It's a simple bill. We're looking at changing a couple words within the same school district. We have rural schools that are on the verge of closing because they were not the recipients of a definition that would benefit them. So what I'm here to ask you to do today is to support Senate Bill 509. To allow a small change that allows remote small schools to qualify for remote small school funding. The right thing to do. If I had my colleagues here from the inner city, I'd be here supporting and advocating on their behalf. And so today, as a rural legislator from District 59, I'm asking for your support. I'm going to keep my comments short because I do have another committee I need to get back to. But I do ask for your support. Not because it's a political issue or an urban-rural issue, but because it's the right issue and it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Senator Byrne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I really appreciate your recognition that it's not just a rural versus an urban. Would you support just taking the mileage out completely and specifying it as small schools?
No, I would be willing to sit down with this committee and with our education folks, with our parents, with our school board members, and trying to come up with a definition that works for all schools and for rural Oregon.
Well, we do have one in the bill. I mean, the formula is pretty clear of defining what a small school is, and I think it's a pretty accurate one. And if we just use that as the factor, recognizing the value, as you've talked about, as what of small schools, and took the mileage out, it would apply equally across the state.
I'd be more than willing to sit down and work with you on that. Most definitely. Again, it's about equal opportunity for every child in the state of Oregon.
One more, Mr. Chair.
Question.
Since we're on the other side of the building and we've been talking a lot about these are takeaways, not ads, would you support adding to make these changes so that the other school districts didn't lose?
I'll tell you what, I'd be more than willing to consider that. Right now, I'm pleased to report to you that the subcommittee that I'm leaving is working very hard at trying to find savings that we can add back to other programs within the state's budget.
Question, Senator.
Well, I just kind of like a question that the committee, Senator Beyer, I suppose, Representative Smith, if you did actually take out the distance, wouldn't that simply create an incentive statewide for all districts to create small schools?
How about
wouldn't that, fit
wouldn't that be a great idea?
That is a possibility.
I wanted to cite that to you because that may be a danger. It may not help you as much as you might think it would.
Fully aware of that. I just have to tell you, I'm a strong supporter of equal opportunity for every child. And there's going to be situations when you deal with a $5.2 billion budget where there's always going to be some holes. And we need to address those holes, and that's why we meet every 2 years to try and address them.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I just, a word of advice, Representative, we're cutting up a fat pig here. You don't want to be too fair about it.
We just want a slice of bacon. We just want a slice of bacon.
Senator, I'm thinking it's kind of a lean pig.
Hey, it's
the eye of the beholder. How hungry are you?
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman.
Representative, thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate your patience.
Thank you.
Mr. Shanoff, please, from District 29. And then there's some folks here that have come in groups. We've got some folks that have come from Wasco County, the Dufour School, Chenoweth School, and Wasco School Districts. We'd like to bring them all up as a panel and just rotate through them. And we've also got some folks from Camas Valley School District 21J, and it'd be good to hear from that. Mr. David Giannotti next, and then the whole group up from Wasco, Chenoweth. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is Paul Shannell. I'm a grandparent in District 29, Dufour. I have grandchildren who go to school where I went to the one-room schoolhouse for 5 years when I was a young boy. I'm now my third generation. I have two grandchildren in the school. I would like to address just when we were talking earlier here. We talked about the big school districts. Now, this is what bothers me is big school districts. Are we big? We're bordered on the east by the Deschutes River, on the west by Hood River County. The north is the Columbia River, and the south is Mount Hood National Forest. That is a big district. We have a sizable population in the small school that we're facing closure with, 20 to 25% Indian children. Native American population varies at the Sulila Village as to when they're fishing. That school closes, we're going to end up with these children riding equivalent. If you were to think about this, and if you're from the metro area, you ride a school bus to Salem to come to work in the morning, and then you ride a school bus back to Portland at the end of the school day. We're talking about these children that it's really difficult to get them into the education system. They're very comfortable there. Their parents, their grandparents went to school with me. Their parents went to school with my daughter, and their grandchildren are going to school with my grandchildren. So there's a familiarity amongst those people. This school has been able to produce a 90% reading level, yet we have 20 to 25% Native American population, and that is incredible. It's a very small school. It's a center of a community. It's not a town. A school building out in the middle of nowhere. My kids don't have the pleasure, my grandchildren don't, of having pavement. They go to school in the summertime, they take the hauler bikes over to school. It's a place to go picnic in the summertime. They ride their bikes. There's some place that they can play on the playground equipment with all the neighbor children. It's a place where families, we have a family that is so big in our community that they use the school for their Thanksgiving. That's the only place they can all sit down in one building and have and visit for Thanksgiving. So it's used. We use basketball, volleyball. It's a community center. This school facing closure has caused there's a group of people, and we're all farmers. There are people that live inside of the city of Dufour that maybe aren't the necessary farmers, but we're all agriculture. It's an agriculture community. We fight fires together. We work together, we're all socially, we interact socially. This facing closure has been just tearing two communities apart. We don't want the school on one end of the county closed, but on the other side, the people on the other end of the county don't want to see their school closed. So it's become this constant pull amongst people that were best of friends. Are now pulling at each other, trying to decide how come you're picking on ours and not picking on yours. And it's caused just a horrendous mess. I think that when we talk about what we have, our children have gone on to college. I mean, it's not like these small schools and centered by our. I don't know what the impact is, but I sure do like small schools. I'll believe in those forever. I went to one that was 13 kids in 5 grades, so, and I have a bachelor's degree from Oregon State University, so you can get a good education. You don't have to make these monstrous buildings and run kids in you can't control. There is not a child that doesn't leave that building, that, and you will talk to our principal, that she doesn't know who their parents are or who's picking them up. It just doesn't happen. We've got 80-some children. I'm not exactly the number because I'm not a real participant. I'm just a grandparent that cares a lot about kids.
Questions from the committee? Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. I'd like to bring the folks up from UFIR, Wasco, Chenoweth. And that includes the folks that have testified, at least signed up to testify. So you have the luxury of the last word this morning. Okay. Are you with the... All right. We will address your testimony following the... Yes.
Go ahead, Doctor. How about if I start? My name is Jim Kiefert. I'm superintendent of the Chenoweth School District. This is my 11th year with the Chenoweth District. The Chenoweth District... is comprised of the Rowena School District, the Mosier School District, and the Chenoweth School District. The three of them all merged a number of years ago. One of the commitments that were made by the board members, that are some of them still on the school board, was that they would keep Mosier School open and close Rowena and keep the Chenoweth School District open. They're 14 miles apart. And when we talk about the social and economic impact of a school on a community, when you drive by Mosier School, which is the school that has remained open, about 95 kids, they do roller skating on Friday night, they do EMT training, the arts and crafts shows are there. It is the center of the community. The gymnasium is open almost every night. The gentleman's comment about the family picnics, Mosier School is the economic center of that community, and the community still has a gas station, has a grocery store, has a small restaurant. If you move down the road to Rowena, where the school closed, there's absolutely nothing. The school became a church, the grocery store closed, the gas station left, and there is no sense of community in Rowena anymore. It's gone. The people in Mosier, and our elementary school is 7.5 miles from a school in Hood River. It's a different county. They're at capacity. There is a geopolitical boundary there that our kids attend our school district. Hood River does not have room for those kids. If we were to bus all those kids that live up on 7 Mile Hill and Browns Creek and out in the, our buses travel a lot through gravel roads, these kids would be on the bus for another 45 minutes to an hour to get to the Chenoweth Elementary. We're at maximum. We've already added a gymnasium and classrooms. There isn't any room for them right now. The issue of economics for that community is one that has been guarded by the board members from Mosier, who are there to say, we need to keep this open because we have cherry growers here. We have farmers out here who need to have a center of a community. Take away Mosier Elementary School, and you'll see another community die. I think we have some obligation to look at the social structure of our state as well. When my school board asked me to come here to talk to you about this Senate Bill 509, their interest was not in making huge changes in the school funding formula. I've served on the funding coalition of superintendents for a number of years. We are not unhappy with the overall general concept of the funding formula. Nothing is ever perfect. You consider when it was developed and how it was developed. I think they did a fairly good job, but it needs tweaking. When this initial legislation and the statute of 327.077 was written and adopted, it identified and acknowledged small, remote elementary schools, as it also did with high schools. And they had to, as we've heard before, set some kind of a limit. They said 8 miles is that limit. If you're within that 8 mile limit, you don't get the funding. And if you are past 8 miles, you do get the funding. So we have a whole lot of elementary schools in the state of Oregon that are getting this correction factor acknowledged by the fact that there's some distance, acknowledged by the fact that you have to have grade levels and a minimum number of students. But somewhere in that philosophy of consolidating schools, it was, if there is another school within 8 miles, even if it isn't in another district, even if it isn't a place where they don't have room for you, you didn't get the funding, kind of starve you to death and maybe you'll just die and go away. Well, it hasn't happened in some of our school districts because the boards who used to have financial control over how much money was spent in schools no longer can do that. So we've kept Mosier Elementary open at the expense of the rest of the schools. We've put money into it because we believe it's the right thing to do. We don't have room to put them into another building. And the consolidation issue, I don't believe, is an issue that is before us today. You know, all the information that's coming out from the Department of Education and in education is saying we made a mistake when we thought schools could be treated like factories. When you built Fords, the bigger the Ford factory, the cheaper you could make them. But when you're dealing with the education of students, large is not the answer. And we're finding kids who are alienated. Anyway, I don't want to go on. My interest and the interest of our school board is to make the slight correction as Representative Smith indicated. And that is to add the words within the district. That acknowledges the need of the small elementary school. It acknowledges the geopolitical boundaries that exist between counties and cities and your representative areas, and says that even if there is a district that is building seven miles away, that you would be acknowledged and receive the same funding as the other school districts in the state of Oregon.
Well, I'm going to ask the witnesses to add what they can to the record in 1 minute.
Sorry about that. I'm Jack Henderson, the superintendent of the Dufour School District. 3 years ago, we merged with another small K-8 elementary school due to the legislation passed down in the mid-90s, and we've been running two elementary schools for the past 3 years. This may take more than 1 minute, Mr. Ferrioli, but I'll try. As I said, we've been running two elementary schools. And what we are trying to do is maintain the quality of education that has been present in both buildings through the years. And as the discussion of the quality education, as many of you have heard and studied, you look at the quality education information. What we have is what the quality education information is striving to achieve for other districts. And I guess that is what I am here today to speak to you about, is that is what we want to maintain. Please give us the ability to do that. I think that we offer a great education, as do the other districts that are present here today and many districts that aren't present here today. But we need the support from the legislature to do that, and that's why I'm here to ask you for that support today. I would like to introduce Mrs. Christine Stetzer, who has a long history of working at the Petersburg School in our district, at first as a teacher and now as the principal.
And I truly believe I can read this in 1 minute.
Yeah.
You'll forgive my nerves, please. I did write out what I wanted to say. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in behalf of smaller remote schools in Oregon. My colleagues from Wasco County and from other districts all around the state have spoken about many different compelling reasons why this proposed language change and the resultant funding is so important for small and remote schools. I would like to speak about why saving these schools is important to the state of Oregon. The focus of what I would like you to consider is contained in the word diversity. In this context, I don't mean the racial and ethnic diversity within our schools, but the broader diversity of the kinds of schools we value in our state. It is desperately important for our future that we nurture and promote a wide variety of educational experiences for our students. Let us value the schools with museums and city parks
and swimming pools just around the corner, as well as the schools where students count the deer on the hillsides every morning and watch the neighboring rancher feed hay to his cattle through the winter. Our small and remote schools are educating future senators and representatives, just as are the schools in Portland and Salem and Eugene. Our future leaders need the differing perspectives that come from different educational backgrounds. The fact that so many of our present legislators were educated in small and remote schools should be a demonstration to us of the importance of investing in Oregon's educational future by protecting and promoting the diversity that we have now. Let's not lose any more schools.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions for the panel?
Were these deer in a refrigerator?
Let's hope not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting us tell our story.
Appreciate it. Mr. Giannotti. And is there anyone else here present that wishes to offer testimony? Add their name to the record.
I would, but we're short of time. I have my board chair here.
Thank you. Welcome.
Tim Banks.
Mr. Banks, Mr. Giannotti.
Good morning.
Please speak your name for the record.
My name is Tim Banks, and I'm currently the school board chair at the Camas Valley School District.
And I'm David Giannotti, the superintendent principal of Camas Valley School District.
I have a feeling we have not much of a disciplinary problem at yours. Oh, Mr. Giannotti.
No, my wife handles all of that. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. Camas Valley is a small, isolated community, much like many of the others who have spoken before me represent. It lies along what once was the Coos Bay Wagon Road, which ran between Roseburg and Coos Bay, a very historic area. I've read about Indian raids and settlers who came from the Rogue River Valley hiked into Camas Valley to buy supplies, so it's been there quite some time. The community is surrounded by BLM ONC lands, and so we are part of the federal forest timber revenues issue.
Why do you look at me when you say that?
I'm sorry. I mentioned it earlier. And our community has been really submerged in logging from the very beginning. It was a logging community for many, many years. And still, logging is part of its tradition. The school is the center of the community, just like other people have mentioned. We have a community library, which serves the entire of Camas Valley. We have a community gym. Our local fire department is located on the school campus. It is the identity of the community, and without the school, we probably would not have the community as it stands now. We survived the merging of school districts, I don't know how many years ago that occurred, because we are a K-12 school district. And more than that, we are actually more of a school family. These students come up together all the way from kindergarten through the 12th grade and graduate together. They know each other very, very well. They know what each other did on the weekend. They know what they ate for breakfast. And in some ways, that is the advantage of the small school, because I, as the disciplinarian, as well as the administrator, also have a good idea what they had for breakfast, and maybe what they did last weekend, and maybe what they're thinking of doing this morning. One of the advantages, we are on a four-day school week because of funding issues. So although our facility is open quite a bit, at other times, our school only runs 4 days. The nearest school is over the mountains, and I'm not even sure if this bill will affect us in reality. But I came to support it because I see small schools as a very valuable, valuable thing. At our school, one of the biggest things that tells me that we have support is the amount of volunteers we have. We have volunteers who run recess duties. We have volunteers who read the kids. We have volunteers who work in classrooms and help with the lunch program. We have volunteers who drive students, transport students. And this is because of budget cuts we've had to go this way. And our community sees a real value to our school, and that's why they keep going, volunteering their time. Our district number is 21J, and that J is critical because what the J tells us is that we can cross county barriers. And so we actually have had students from Coos County, even though we are located in Douglas County, students from Coos County can come to our school district, and the reason for that is distance. The distance between our school district and Coquille is a lot of windy road in between there. And after Bridge School, and if you're probably not familiar with the geography of the area, but Bridge School was a school that was closed down, that lay between our school district and Coquille. When it closed down, all the elementary students went one way or the other, and some of them came to Camas. Camas Valley has been suffering a lot lately from budget cuts. And as I look at the funding formulas, and when we talk about state equalization and funding formulas, one thing we have noticed is that at Camas Valley, our funding is not equal with others' funding. Even with the small school correction, we're funded less than a lot of other school districts. And I think if you took a good close look at some of that, you would find that a lot of the larger school districts do have some advantages in that they do have a tax base. We're surrounded by federal forest land. Not much of a tax base there. We passed a bond measure at one time, but it hasn't helped us a great deal. And so as far as passing a property tax measure that would help us, or a bond measure that would help us, it isn't very likely. Other school districts also have the opportunity to have partnerships with industry and also with large corporations to give gifts. Those fall outside the equalization formula. We don't have those opportunities. Those businesses and so forth don't exist in Camas Valley. But I just want to come back to the value of Camas Valley, and you've all expressed it. You see a lot of value in the small schools. Well, I moved there from I grew up in a large school, 2,000 kids, graduated in a class of over 500, and I remember feeling like a number. I know every one of the students' names who attend my school. I call it my school because I have a lot of buy-in. And I treat every one of those as an individual, and they know who I am, and I know who they are. And that's a real advantage in a school setting. It really helps educate children. And so I support this, not because I want to take away from anybody else, as was stated earlier. I am a member of COSLA. But I think a lot needs to be done to help the smaller schools. That's what I have to say. Jim?
I'd like to thank you all for this committee and the chair, and also the other people that were listed on the top of this Senate bill for sponsoring that. And I'd just like to say I'm a parent of four boys that have graduated through the school that we just mentioned. We've been in that area for 20 years, my wife and myself.
Could you speak your name once again?
Tim Banks.
Thank you. And Mr. Banks, we're starting to lose a member, so if we could...
Okay.
Brief.
I just wanted to. It's a little bit more than brief, so I'll just say that most of what I would like to say has been stated already by other members, and I just thank you for your listening to this concern. It's a very real concern, and there's a lot of faces behind the faces you see here at the microphones, and I know that you know that. So I just wanted to reiterate that, and thank you for looking at this as closely as you are.
Mr. Banks, it's an important thing when parents and grandparents go to schools
it's an even more important thing when parents and grandparents care enough about their schools to come to the legislature. I don't mean to minimize your testimony, just that we're under some time constraints.
Well, I understand that very seriously. Right. Thank you.
Any questions for the panel? Hearing and seeing none. Is there any other person here that wishes to offer their name or other testimony in support or of opposition to this bill? If not, we're going to close the public hearing. We're going to announce that due to the constraints of time, we're moving the other bill on our agenda. Was it Senate Bill 252? Back on the agenda. So we'll put it back on tomorrow's agenda. And if there is no other business to come before the committee, I thank the public members of the public that have traveled long distances to be here, the parents, the grandparents, the school district administrators, and yes, even Mr. Rose. Thank you very much. We're closing the hearing.